come with hearts and voices, boys, we'll sing a brand new song. Sing it with a spirit that will thrill the mighty throng. Sing it till the millions hear and send the news along. While we go marching to victory.
Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Yes, we hope you like us when we're angry. Or today, just me. I'm here alone and being angry. This is your McKinley Minute, and welcome to it. From time to time, Owen and I are going to share some standalone podcasts or pre-produced packages like this one. It's a chance to share with you nice people our passion, in this case, my passion for our 25th president, William McKinley, and to save a piece of history related to his presidency. Now, I want you to put on some hiking boots, your warmest coat, and a big hat, maybe one of those fuzzy Brezhnev numbers that looked like it was going to come alive and strangle him and bite him in the neck. At least I always hoped it would, because I grew up in the 80s. Today, we're going to climb a mountain. It's a big mountain. It's a tall mountain. In fact, at 20,320 feet, it's the tallest mountain in North America. It's named Mount McKinley, and I'd like to keep it that way.
You can't throw out painting other people's property. At least have the decency to ask me if you can paint it.
Okay, then. And may I please paint your lake?
No, I don't want my lake painted. The mountains are okay. I don't own them.
McKinley's home in Canton, Ohio is now a library. Kind of a run-down 60s-era library in not a great part of town. And I'm not talking a presidential library, although the McKinley Library and Museum is in Canton, and it is a great place to visit. Unfortunately, no effort was really made to preserve McKinley's house. It was part of a hospital for a while, and eventually it just deteriorated so much that it had to be knocked down. And all that's left is pictures.
Man has always loved his buildings. But what happens when the buildings say no more?
And a school in Buffalo, New York. A school, mind you. You know, they're supposed to be about learning and history and teaching our kids that things happened before they were born. Well, this school knocked down the Milburn House where President McKinley died after being shot to make room for more cars.
Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
Yes, you heard right. They paved McKinley's house and put up a parking lot. William and Ida McKinley had no surviving children. So when you have no heirs to carry on your legacy, nobody to fundraise, nobody to go smash a bottle of champagne into the side of a new aircraft carrier, it's really not good for you being remembered. Plus, McKinley preceded Theodore Roosevelt in the White House, which is the historical equivalent of being the opening band for the Rolling Stones. Nobody remembers you. And McKinley also died before writing his memoirs or completing his vision for the fair, more equitable America that TR ultimately brought into being and gets credit for in the history books. All of this is the perfect recipe for being forgotten by history. It was no surprise then, at least not to me, when on January 29th of this year, Alaska's Senator Lisa Murkowski, a Republican like McKinley, introduced legislation to rename his mountain Denali. Now, Murkowski probably didn't know it, but January 29th is a significant date for McKinley folks. That's his birthday. Again, she probably didn't know, but ignorance of history is no excuse for such a slap in the face to a historical figure, much less a president. Anyway, here's Murkowski explaining why she supports this absurd change.
In Alaska, that mountain is referred to as something else. We don't refer to it as Mount McKinley. We just call it Denali. That's what we've always called it. Denali is an Alaska native word, an Athabascan word, and it means the high one. And as you think about this incredible mountain, you think that's pretty appropriately named.
Maybe I shouldn't have called it absurd, but I have to say, calling a mountain high is not so much appropriately named as appropriately described. The mountain part, that kind of already clued me into the fact that it was high. I didn't think it was a low mountain. Those are called hills. Again, here we are at the top of this great, majestic peak. I turn to you and I ask, wow, what's it called? And your response is, the tall one? Or the high one?
Hey there, sonny!
And who are you?
I'm the old man of the mountain, and I don't want them painted.
But imagine you tell me it's named Mount McKinley, after this great guy who was our president and got slaughtered while he was just trying to shake somebody's hand. You have a moment then to explain who McKinley was, why he was the most beloved president since Abraham Lincoln, and to talk about the highs of his successes and the lows of his tragic assassination. But for some reason, Senator Murkowski seems to think that McKinley is a president who was murdered, yeah, by an anarchist looking to strike down our government, but is somehow only significant to some small corner of a faraway state, namely Ohio.
I know that the name Mount McKinley has some special significance to the folks in Ohio because of President William McKinley. My response to those folks is you're more than welcome to go right on referring to the mountain as Mount McKinley, just as Alaskans have always referred to the mountain as Denali.
Okay, that completely misses the point of honoring somebody in the first place. Are we all going to individually choose names of our own for geographic locations? Can the Dakotans call Mount Rushmore Mount Four Dudes? How about if Floridians want to go back to calling Cape Kennedy Cape Canaveral? Or maybe folks in Lincoln, Nebraska will decide they like alliteration and they'll say, hey, everybody call us Nixon, Nebraska now. Actually, we don't care what you call us. We're going to call ourselves Nixon, Nebraska, and we don't care what the maps say when you're trying to find your way here. Senator Murkowski claimed, quote, I would rather have this peak be called by the name it has gone by for centuries by Alaskans than a man who never set foot in our state. That last bit about McKinley never visiting Alaska seems to be a big deal with those who support the switcheroo. Well, yeah, I guess McKinley was kind of a jerk for, getting shot twice in the chest and abdomen and dying before he could visit the Alaska Territory. Yeah, where does he get off? What a loser! Seriously. For McKinley to visit Alaska after the naming would have taken months, and that's in an era before cell phones or emails or video conferencing. He would have effectively had to stop being president to go there. Not only that, he would have had to leave the contiguous United States, and back then, no sitting president had ever left American territory while they were in office. In fact, when McKinley visited Niagara Falls the day before he was assassinated, he walked just halfway across the bridge so he wouldn't accidentally cross over into Canada. He was a guy who tradition meant a lot to. Theodore Roosevelt was the first sitting president to break this precedent and leave the country while in office. He did so to visit the Big Dig for the Panama Canal. The fact that there was no canal through the isthmus should remind us of just how hard it was to get around in those days. This was more than half a century before Air Force One and 100 years before the Harrison Ford movie.
Get off my plane!
No, to visit Alaska, William McKinley would have had no choice. He'd have had to take a ship out of the country, and mostly, he would have had to take a train. And rail travel was risky in those days, even deadly. On his way to be inaugurated as the 14th president, Franklin Pierce's Pullman suffered a relatively minor crash, but even that was enough to kill his son Benjamin. The poor kid was actually almost decapitated right in front of his mother and father. Pierce tried to hide the kid's body, but it was no use, and it really was horrible. They both entered the White House with a broken heart. Grover Cleveland, president before McKinley, actually skipped his vice president's funeral because he didn't want to risk a journey. Grover knew that if he died, there'd be nobody in Washington to take over the White House, casting the government into chaos. So this was not an easy trip. It was not easy to get to Alaska. If you look at a map, you should know, and if you're the senator from there, you should know just how far it is from Washington, D.C. Once you know all this, you'd have to agree it's pretty silly for Alaskans to be ticked off that McKinley never had the chance to pop in and say hello. Anyway, let's get back to playing.
The name game.
It all started back in 1896 when William Dickey of New Hampshire was prospecting for gold in South Central Alaska's Susitna River. Describing the experience in the New York Sun, Dickey later wrote, "We named our peak Mount McKinley, after William McKinley of Ohio, who had been nominated for the presidency." Now, I have to be honest, I have yet to hear any historian explain, in a way future dwellers can relate to today, why the free coinage of silver versus the sound money gold standard so roiled Gilded Age America. But it did. This was the issue in the 1896 election. It pitted East versus West, industry versus farms, and McKinley's gold bugs against William Jennings Bryan's silverites, who I always thought they should have called silverfish because it's really kind of gross. Dickey knew many silver miners who stood to make a killing if the U.S. Mint began to issue currency backed by silver under a Bryan administration. But Dickey supported McKinley's gold standard in Sound Money and immortalized him in the mountain. Many people thought this way, including a significant chunk of Democrats who crossed party lines to back William McKinley against Bryan.
Hurrah, hurrah, McKinley is the man. Hurrah, hurrah, gold will lead the van. Then we will shout protection over all this glorious land. Marching with McKinley to victory.
By 1901, when McKinley died, he'd saved America from the economic depression he'd inherited, won a second term in a landslide rematch over Bryan, and was incredibly beloved throughout the nation. Knowing all of this about McKinley, you may be asking, so who started this push to wipe his name off the map? It must be a communist, or maybe Al-Qaeda.
He's a Nazi! Get him!
No. It was those fine people up in Alaska. Their legislature got the snowball rolling in 1975, and then Governor Jay Hammond endorsed the move. The U.S. Board on Geographic Names was all poised to approve the idea when... Not so fast. The congressional delegation of the Buckeye State leaped to the defense of its native son, known as the Idol of Ohio, to maintain his rocky legacy. This began a dance in Congress that continues to this day. When Alaska Senator Ted Stevens first tried to change the name of the mountain, his fellow Republican Ralph Regula, whose Ohio district included Canton, Ohio, where the president lived and is interred in that towering monument next to the library, blocked the attempt in the House of Representatives. Congressman Regula said of McKinley, quote, "If somebody wanted to rename the Kennedy Center, the Massachusetts people would be a little upset," which makes sense. And it also reminds me, there's a Mount Kennedy. At the time of President Kennedy's assassination, it was the highest peak in North America that no man had yet reached. So Robert F. Kennedy scaled it, planted the Kennedy family flag up top, and the Canadian government named it for JFK. That's right, Mount Kennedy is in Canada, and Canada has plenty of native people. But I've never heard one of them demand, "Take that American's name off that mountain. Who cares if he got shot and killed? We want to use our name." The map stays Kennedy because people know the guy was killed tragically, and even though there are still people alive who remember Kennedy and there aren't for McKinley, that's what history is all about, and that's the point of naming things on the map in the first place, so after the person passes from living memory, they don't get forgotten and swept away under the rug. So while Canada maintains the name Mount Kennedy as a memorial to one martyred president, here we have the entire congressional delegation of an American state saying exactly the opposite about a name they should be honored to have on one of their mountains. I know I'd love to look out the window and see Mount McKinley, wouldn't you? Congressman Regula also pointed out, President McKinley was the president of the entire country, so it is entirely fitting that a national monument bear his name. The park and the mountain are federal lands, not state lands, and their maintenance is paid for by all Americans, not just Alaskans. Well, game, set, match. I know this American wants his tax dollars going to keep the name Mount McKinley on the mountain.
I'm the old man of the mountain, and I don't want them painted.
And by the way, Alaska is one of the top two or three states in receiving federal aid from Washington. So for all the talk about Alaska names and independence, they're still happy to be part of the union when it comes to cashing those checks. The 1980 compromise already changed the park's name from McKinley to Denali. So McKinley already gave up a piece of land the size of Massachusetts on the understanding, which some Alaskans now deny, that the mountain continue as a permanent monument to his life and legacy. But some obviously still aren't satisfied, so Congressman Regula had to block their efforts, and he did so with a little legislative maneuvering. Every 2 years, like clockwork, he'd introduce a bill endorsing the name Mount McKinley. And because the Interior Department is unable to change the name of a geographical location while the issue is pending in Congress, simply introducing the bill was enough to check folks in the last frontier.
Pretty sneaky, sis.
There was a brief scare in our pro-McKinley forces when Congressman Regula retired in 2009, but he was sure to ask Democrat Tim Ryan, who hails from McKinley's birthplace of Niles, Ohio, to keep introducing the same name bills and block any attempt to take McKinley's name off the mountain. Now, do you see what happened there? Behold the power of McKinley. He can actually unite Democrats and Republicans in death just as he did in life and get them to work together on something. Isn't that impressive? Isn't that what we all say we want in Washington? Now you might be saying, but Dean, this is a history podcast. Shouldn't you be for the traditional name of the mountain? Maybe if Denali was significant like Constantinople.
This Istanbul was Constantinople. Now it's Istanbul, not Constantinople. Been a long time gone. Constantinople, now it's Turkish delight on a moonlit night.
But Denali isn't even the only name for the mountain. In the Susitna'a region, the name is Doleika, and around Cook Inlet, it's Trelika. And Denali may be popular in the interior of our largest state, but there are eight other native names alone in other regions, names like Bolshia, Gora, and Tanada. Wait, I know those names. Didn't Godzilla fight them on Mount Fuji? Add into the name game mix that the Russians, who owned the Alaska Territory before selling it to the United States, had three different names for Mount McKinley, and English speakers called it Dunsmore's Mountain. So with all these different names, what's the one thing that unites us all as a nation? Well, since we're all Americans, we all have the same presidents and a common history. We are all loyal to that grand old flag first and foremost. Not to our parties, not to our states, and not to our tribes. But although I stand firmly for keeping the name McKinley because I like the guy, as I stand here atop this mountain, I have to wonder what he'd have thought about it. As Owen and I said in our President's Day podcast, it's funny and a little annoying how people always think dead historical figures will agree with them, right? Speaking of the departed, here's Chief Mitch Dementiff of Nenana, Alaska, from the website seedenali.com. The chief passed away in 2009, but here he is recounting the legend of Mount McKinley.
Long before Denali was created, there lived in Alaska an Indian named Yahoo. He possessed great power, but had no wife. Yahoo built a canoe and paddled west to find one. As he approached the Raven Chief's village, he began singing a song that explained he was seeking a wife. The wife of the second chief spoke softly. You may have my daughter for your wife, but take her and go quickly. The Raven Chief is preparing to kill you. Yahoo began to paddle away with the young woman. The Raven Chief was right behind him. The Raven Chief caused a great storm. The water became very rough. Yahoo took out a powerful stone and threw it ahead of him, calming the waters, but mountainous green waves continued to roll behind him. Next, the Raven Chief threw his great spear straight at Yahoo, but Yahoo, using medicine, changed the large wave behind him into a mountain of stone just in time. The great spear glanced off the crest of the stone mountain. There was a second tremendous wave of water, even greater than the first. Yahoo used all his medicine to turn this wave into a tremendous mountain of stone. When the great spear hit the top of the mountain, there was a crash of breaking rock, and the great spear flew off into the sky. The Raven Chief was paddling so quickly, his canoe struck the second great mountain of stone. The Raven Chief was thrown onto the rocks, where he changed instantly into a raven who flapped to the top of the mountain. Exhausted, Yahoo fell asleep. When he awoke, he was back at home with his new wife at his side. Gazing around, Yahoo saw the two mountains he had created. There was a smaller one to the west, now called Foraker, but the larger one, the one the great war spear glanced off before shooting into the stars, that mighty dome would be called Denali, the great one. Yahoo looked to the sky to see the great raven, happy to be back with his people, dancing his approval in the wind.
I wonder how McKinley would feel hearing that legend. I bet he'd be proud to have his name on the mountain for sure. But I also think of McKinley's veto message on a bill authorizing miners and prospectors like Dickey to push Navajo and Moqui tribesmen off their lands in Arizona so that they could exploit the resources there. McKinley wrote to Congress at the time, quote, "While the Indians are the wards of the government and must submit to that which is deemed for their best interests by the sovereign guardian, they should, nevertheless, be dealt with in a manner calculated to give them confidence in the government and to assist them in passing through the inevitable transition to a state of civilization and full citizenship." McKinley vetoed this bill to steal land from the native people of Arizona. The language of that message reminds me of what a fundamentally decent guy McKinley was and how humble he was. He didn't revel in the power and perks and pomp of office, and he certainly didn't want to offend anyone just to puff himself up. In fact, speaking of bipartisanship, he once pulled a new Republican colleague aside and coached him to avoid such fiery attacks on the Democrats. And remember, at this point, the Democrats are still bearing the stigma as the party of slavery and rebellion and the Confederacy and outright treason in some cases. It's probably why McKinley was able to attract such broad support and admiration throughout his career, even winning when that district he represented in Ohio was gerrymandered to try to get him out of it. He could win pretty much anywhere.
McKinley is the magic name that sweeps a country through. In time of peace, Columbia's friends, in war so brave and true. He's bound to win in this campaign and rule the country too, while we go marching to victory.
Even the man who shot William McKinley, Leon Czolgosz, felt he had to say he had nothing personally against the president. And other anarchists as hardened as Alexander Berkman, then serving a long term in prison for trying to assassinate Henry Clay Frick of Carnegie Steel, said there had been no point in shooting this president and that it had done nothing to advance the cause of anarchism. So mountains and monuments, personal accolades and personal praise, these things didn't mean a lot to McKinley. They didn't really mean anything to him. When allies pushed to award McKinley the Congressional Medal of Honor for his bravery at the Battle of Antietam, which is the bloodiest day in American history, and we'll get back to his service there in a future podcast, McKinley quietly asked them to stop. Thanks, but no thanks. Even though Major General Nelson Miles, commander of the United States Army, approved McKinley for the nation's highest military honor, McKinley said he didn't want the medal. He just didn't think that he deserved it, and he didn't want to draw attention to himself. So what would McKinley think of the name change? Nobody can know, of course, and speculating about what a dead person would think is something that gets us really angry. But knowing how McKinley dealt with contentious issues like the Indian land issue in Arizona, and knowing how he just wanted to work together on the small things to get the big things done, I think we have to speculate that he'd try to find a compromise. At least try. Maybe he'd call aside Senator Murkowski, as he did that rambunctious young Republican House member back in the day, and tell her, instead of issuing press releases that sort of belittled him, one Murkowski spokesman suggested naming something in Ohio after the late Senator Stevens, which completely misses the point of naming something after a president who's president of all the people, not a state senator. Maybe she could try supporting the McKinley Library, or Birthplace, or education of kids today about the events of the Civil War that they're not learning much about. The Last Frontier's congressional delegation might take the time to learn a little bit about the man whose name they want to wipe off the map. They could then cite some of these stories about McKinley's modesty, maybe cite that veto message, and try to make a persuasive case that he'd have favored the name the locals prefer. But I have a feeling that if they did start to learn about the major, they're the ones whose minds would be changed. They'd be inspired by William McKinley's life, his service, and his tragic murder, and they'd find themselves supporting the idea that this quiet, giant mountain peak should be named for a quiet giant of a man. And by the way, I've noticed that the most famous Alaskan, Governor Sarah Palin, also refers to it as Mount McKinley. Well, the sun's starting to set, so it's time to make our way down from Mount McKinley and get back to camp, where we'll try to convince other climbers not to use the name Denali. I hope you enjoyed our trip to the highest peak in North America. If you'd like to contact any of the people I mentioned today to express your support or opposition to the name change, we'll link to their contact information at angryhistory.com. Thanks for listening to Your McKinley Minute. Until next time, for Owen Mugen, I'm Dean Karyanis. Take care.
Hurrah, hurrah, McKinley is the man. Hurrah, hurrah, gold will lead the van.
Visit angryhistory.com to learn more about the topics discussed on today's episode. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You can also like us on Facebook, tweet us at Angry History, or send us an email to angry@angryhistory.com.
Marching with McKinley to victory.